The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Well, at Bible Shots, we're continuing the story of Jesus told by Matthew, one of Jesus' followers. And this story, it gets straight into the action. It gets straight into asking one of the big questions of life there in verse 16. Man comes up to Jesus and says, "Teacher, what good thing must I do to get eternal life?" And questions around death and what happens to you after you die, they're big questions, and they've also been the source of plenty of inspiration for different books and movies and TV shows. Coming out in a few weeks is The Man Who Invented Christmas. It's a story of Charles Dickens writing A Christmas Carol. Of course, the story of Ebenezer Scrooge, the miser who is greedy, holds on to all his money, confronted with the ghosts of Christmas, past, present and future, who warn him about the bad track that he's on, spending, you know, an eternity in prison and in chains. If he continues in his greedy ways. One example of how death and the afterlife is kind of dealt with in different sorts of media. Of course, another one would be, if you haven't seen it yet, Russ Matthews, who works for City Bible Forum, has put a review up so you can see if it's something you would like to see. Another sort of, if you're into Netflix, TV show, less movies, less novels, The Good Place, something I've been watching a bit recently. It stars Kirsten Bell and Ted Danson there. And if you haven't seen it before, so Kirsten Bell's character and the blonde on the couch, she wakes up after she's died and finds herself in The Good Place. The twist being she's very much not meant to be in The Good Place. But according to The Good Place, there's a finely tuned system that works out whether you've done enough good or bad things to end you in the good place. I think my favourite is -90.9 to your score for ruining an opera with boorish behaviour. That's their kind of system of how it might happen. It's a little bit of fun, but it does touch on that bigger question, what happens after you die? How would you make sure that you go to the good place, that you have eternal life? And that's exactly the question that this guy who comes up to Jesus is asking. At Bible Shots, we do try not to assume particular beliefs. Not everyone who comes along to Bible Shots is a follower of Jesus or would identify as a follower of Jesus, and you might not even believe in an afterlife at all. That might be a question for another day. And if that is you, maybe you'd like to do a bit of a thought experiment today as we look at what Jesus has to say. If there was an afterlife, what sort of person would be there in the good place? What would it take to be in heaven, in eternal life, in God's kingdom, whichever language you want to use. Because as we turn to this interview, I guess, that Jesus has with this man, he's someone who's probably in the best possible position to get that, green tick of approval to get into the good place. But we see even he comes up short. So we're going to look at this passage in two parts. We're going to be looking at the interview and the teaching. I think we're going to see that Jesus, the Jesus of history, he demands a total life commitment that following him might be costly, but it will be worth it. I think that's what we're going to see. So first we're going to look at the interview. Now, a good interview, like you might have watched Enough Rope with Andrew Denton, a good interview show is going to reveal something about the people being interviewed. And what we have here is an interview that reveals something about Jesus, I think about God, and about the man who's being interviewed. So as we go through these three questions, I think we get a sense of what Jesus is like, what God requires, and what the man is like. So let's have a look at this interview. First question, "Teacher, what must I do to get eternal life?" Answer, "Why do you ask me about what is good?" Jesus replied. "There's only one who is good, and if you want to enter life, keep the commandments." So on the one hand, it's a fairly straightforward answer. You want to get into heaven, you want eternal life, keep the commandments. But on the other hand, Jesus actually, his answer's interesting. He kind of sets himself on the same level as God. He says God's the one who's good. He's the one who's in a position to tell people what is good and what can get them eternal life. He doesn't say, well, look, I am not God. In fact, he just goes on to say, this is what you need to do to have eternal life. In answering the question the way he does, Jesus effectively claims to have the authority of God. What's Jesus like? Jesus, in the story, claims to have the authority of God. It means there's a need to listen to Jesus and what he has to say, and raises that question. Will this man listen to what Jesus says? The answer to keep the commands isn't enough for him, so he pushes a bit further. Well, which ones? Which might sound like a strange question to our ears, but given that in the first five books of the Old Testament, it's full of commands. One tradition said there's 613 commands there. Not all of them were for every situation. Some were for quite particular situations. Narrowing down what Jesus meant seems like a fair question. Jesus says, oh, you know, don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't steal or give false testimony, honour your father and mother, and love your neighbour as yourself. And so Jesus, in his answer, he sort of goes to the Ten Commandments. He mentions several of the Ten Commandments, but also the last command he mentions there, love your neighbour as yourself, that's not one of the Ten Commandments. It's from a different part of the Old Testament, a book called Leviticus. And it's interesting, it's actually a lot harder to quantify loving your neighbour than it is to quantify not murdering someone. Essentially, I think Jesus is pointing out that if God is the one who says what you need to do to have eternal life, well, God says you need to be totally committed. God requires a total life commitment. But it's also worth noticing in the flow of the story that Jesus doesn't list all the Ten Commandments. He's selective. He doesn't mention the Godward commands. He doesn't mention you'll have no other gods before me. He doesn't mention you'll have no idols. He also doesn't mention you will not covet. We don't use the word covet today very much, but you could equally say, you know, don't be envious or don't be greedy, and you're getting a similar idea. And it makes you wonder, why does Jesus leave those out? We might come back to that. Because the stakes for the man here, as he's interviewing Jesus, they're nothing less than life and death. You can understand why he wants to keep pushing. Question three, well, all these I have kept, the young man said. What do I still lack? It's kind of interesting that only now Matthew kind of gives us this extra bit of detail about this guy who's come and interviewing Jesus. He's actually a young man. Maybe it's that only a young person who hasn't weathered some of life's storms could have the audacity to claim, yeah, I've done that, I'm doing that, I've got it all sorted. But I don't think there's anything here to make us at least think he's not genuine. It almost seems like he wants some sort of task or some sort of deed, some sort of a challenge or a quest that he can complete to make sure he's certain that he'll have eternal life. And if that's what he wanted, then Jesus' answer is actually pretty confronting. Jesus says, if you want to be perfect, go. Sell your possessions and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come, follow me. The rich man, he's actually found, so this young man has found what he's looking for, but it's going to be costly. It sounds kind of like a confronting command that Jesus places before him, but actually Jesus isn't really asking him to do anything strange or something he hasn't been talking about already. Back in chapter 13, Jesus told a parable. He said, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again, and then in his joy went and sold all that he had to buy that field. As a painting by Rembrandt that was done to illustrate this parable. And the point is, entering God's kingdom can be costly. And in the aftermath of this encounter, this interview with Jesus, we see that the young man went away sad because he had great wealth. You see, this rich young man, he got the answer he was looking for. He actually found the answer to how he could have eternal life. Jesus told him the way, but for this young, rich man, the cost was too high. When the young man's asked to choose between material wealth and the kingdom of heaven, eternal life, the young man makes his choice. He values things that won't last over things that will. He chooses material things over God, who can give him life. And so I think Jesus has kind of drawn the implications together from the previous answers he's given. You know, if Jesus has the authority of God and God commands a total life commitment, Jesus is actually exposing the part of this man's life that's ignoring God, how he relates to his money, his possessions. Suddenly that command, do not covet, or do not be greedy, and don't have any gods before me, makes you realize this rich young man who seemed so impressive actually had a big problem. And he went away grieving. I think he's a really tragic figure. I suspect the fact that he's sad, it recognizes that he actually wants what Jesus is offering, but he can't have both. He sees what Jesus is offering, but he can't let go of what he's already got. And that's kind of what's so tragic. He's holding on to something that's already proved it can't meet his deepest need. The whole reason he sought out Jesus was because he wanted to know, what must I do to have eternal life? You know, he could see he was a good person by all appearances, but he knew it wasn't enough. Despite his wealth, his death was still somewhere out there in the future. And the best that his wealth can do is make that 20, 40, 60 years or more that he's got left more comfortable. And maybe a little bit longer. But sooner or later, he will still die. His wealth could not help him gain eternal life. His wealth couldn't help him solve the problem of death. That's why he went to Jesus in the first place. But he couldn't let it go. I really wonder what happened to this guy back in ancient Judea. I wonder what happened to him after his encounter with Jesus. You know, could his wealth ever really bring him joy or pleasure from this point onwards? Or from now on, now that he's realized that they can't actually solve his problem, will all the good things that life can bring him be tinged with that taste of death? Knowing that they can't deal with his ultimate problem, that as good as they are, this is as good as it can get. When he was faced with the command of Jesus to give away all he had, he couldn't bring himself to do it. No wonder he was sad. We've seen the interview, we've heard about Jesus' authority, the total life commitment Jesus requires, and that this young rich man was unwilling to do it. What was asked of him. And so now we're going to look at the teaching. And as we look at the teaching, we're going to see wealth is a barrier to eternal life. You can't earn eternal life, but Jesus' followers can have it. So in the interview section, as this young rich man was interviewing Jesus, we were kind of seeing a conflict of values. What really has value? Wealth and possessions, or the wealth of God's kingdom? Now, on the one hand, we need to acknowledge Jesus' command to this guy, sell all your possessions, give everything to the poor and follow me, was to a particular rich man at a particular point in history. Jesus didn't give the command to everyone then, nor is it a command to everyone now. Material wealth, it's not inherently evil, but Jesus teaches his followers that material wealth, far from being a blessing, it can actually be a hindrance to what's really important. Jesus said to his disciples, "Truly I tell you, it's hard for someone who's rich to enter the kingdom of heaven. Again, I tell you, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for someone who is rich to enter the kingdom of heaven." Now, your average camel is somewhere between 1.8 and 2 meters tall, weighs between 400 and 600 kilos. I'm nowhere near that big. I may sometimes look like a camel before, you know, I've properly, you know, showered and combed my hair in the morning, but I am nowhere near that big. And even if I were to pull out a needle, which I, you know, have now lost over the last couple of times of doing the talk, I'm not going to be fitting through it, and I'm a lot smaller. It is impossible. And if it's impossible for me, how much more for a full-sized camel? Jesus is saying wealth can be a barrier to eternal life. The command to sell everything and give to the poor was a particular command to a particular man at a particular point in history. But even today, Jesus' followers are called to put everything ahead of behind following him, called to put following Jesus ahead of everything else. And that can be really hard when there's a lot of everything else in your life. There's a warning here for Jesus' followers not to make too much of material wealth and to recognize it for the hazard that it can be. Jesus says wealth is a barrier to eternal life, but he also says even the best people can't earn eternal life. I think the disciples, they seem to be scandalized by the claim that Jesus makes. And I don't think it's because they somehow thought, well, all rich people are wonderful. They're not that naive. But if you think about it, if anyone is going to have the chance to live a good life, to not be caught in situations where they need to do something dodgy out of an act of desperation, to have the opportunities to actually do lots of good in the world, it's going to be the privileged kid, the one with the wealth and the resources and the inclination to do good things. But if even he can't do it, well, what hope does everyone else have? And Jesus says, with human beings, it's impossible for even the best of us in the best situation to earn our way into God's kingdom, to earn eternal life. But Jesus' followers will get it. They will get eternal life. The disciples, they're gobsmacked. Who then can be saved? In verse 25. And so even if you identify as a follower of Jesus today, you might have similar questions to the rich man who came to Jesus, similar questions to the disciple, who can be saved? Maybe something like, how can I know I have eternal life? Can I really be sure? And the answer can seem less hopeful if you look around and don't actually feel like there's much evidence that God's on your side. You might not have as much as you would like or even need. It's easy to see what others have, particularly those who wander away from God and ignore him and think, I'm missing out. If even the privileged people can't be saved, what hope can I have? And Jesus agrees, with man, this is impossible. But, and it's one of those buts that's immensely comforting, but with God, all things are possible. There is a possibility of having eternal life. Because when it comes to God, he can do what's impossible for humans to do. Jesus is going to unpack this idea a bit more in the passage we're going to look at next week. But for now, there's a short interaction that was at the first paragraph in the story that we're looking at today, before the story we were looking at today, where some people bring children to Jesus, and he says, the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these. And I think it's an important piece of the puzzle to figuring out, well, how is it that you can have eternal life? Back in chapter 18, which we looked at a little while ago, Jesus said, truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. If you were here when we looked at that part of the Jesus story, you might remember this guy who I put up on the screen. You know, he's a cute little kid, but clearly he's not going to be contributing much. Young kid, picking his nose, he's not the most honourable person, he's not the wealthiest person, probably hasn't achieved very much. All he can really do is accept what's given to him. People can't earn their way into eternal life, but it can be given to them. It's a gift that comes from following Jesus. So Jesus acknowledges following him can have great cost. But the description that he gives at the end of the passage we're looking at there, it makes it abundantly clear whatever following Jesus costs you in the short term, it will be worth it in the long term. No matter the cost now, when it comes to the day when you die, it will be worth it. I think that's part of the reason why Jesus' followers are free to have a different attitude to wealth and possessions. See, where the rich man who came to Jesus is now in this position where even his best experiences are tainted with the reality of death and the knowledge that this is the best life can ever be, Jesus' followers are free to forego things that this world offers, even really good things, knowing that if they pass on it for the sake of Jesus and his kingdom, well, actually, it's nothing compared to what awaits them in eternity. And I think that's the great reversal Jesus is talking about there when he says in verse 30, many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first. It's the reason Jesus' followers are free to have a different attitude to wealth and possessions. Well, today we've heard the story of a rich man who came to Jesus, and we've heard in his interview that Jesus saw that he had the same authority of God, that God demands a total life commitment, and despite his impressive appearance, the rich man could not earn eternal life. He continues to face the problem of death. And as we've reflected on it in Jesus' teaching, we've seen that material wealth can actually act as a barrier to eternal life, because eternal life can't be earned, but it can be given. No matter what it costs, it will be worth it. So the question, just to make sure I've understood the question, so particularly for Christians who might be thinking, okay, I want to tell people about Jesus, that might require leaving my parents who might need some sort of care to do that, and so how does that sort of balance out? Yeah, that's a good question. So for people who follow Jesus, who say, yeah, there's a real need to share that message, but there's also genuine commitments that they have, I think those are things that might really need to be worked through. For some people, the different commitments and responsibilities they have may limit where they can go and what they can do in terms of going overseas to share the gospel message. Some people might be able to say, well, I've got brothers and sisters who are in a position to care for my parents, and so I've still got some freedom to go. Other people I know have had to say, well, because of my parents' health condition, now is not the time to do that. It's not a, I'll never go over, but I've sort of gone, actually, it's important that I look after my parents, and so now might not be the time to, you know, go and be a missionary. But that said, even in the context that they're in, if that means working, you know, in the city, or you know, being a stay-at-home mum, or whatever it might be, they're still looking for ways to, well, how do I share the message of Jesus with people around them? So it might limit the options that are available to them in terms of where they go and what they do, but that doesn't mean they don't look at how I can be serving in the situation I'm in. I think the particular situation Jesus is speaking to here is the reality that sometimes following him breaks relationships. So I know a friend of mine who became a Christian. Her parents are traditional Chinese background, and they now refer to her as half-daughter because of her decision to follow Jesus. And that's really sad. But for her, she sees the value in following Jesus. She still seeks to honour them and love them as best as she can, but choosing to follow Jesus has actually impaired her relationship with her parents. And I think what Jesus is saying here is that, yeah, that's costly and painful, but come the day when she has to face death and in the scope of eternity, as painful as that cost is, it will be worth it. Yeah. We have time for another question or comment. One that came up yesterday, which I thought was an interesting question, was in verse 21, where Jesus says, if you want to be perfect, go and sell your possessions and give them to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven, then come follow me. So one thing was to note that to be perfect doesn't mean you'll now have, you know, no issues and be a, you know, perfect person, but sometimes the word complete might be a better way of understanding it, or to get the right sense of perfect. And so for this guy, actually his wealth and possessions seem to have been keeping him from having a relationship with God, which was actually the most important thing to being a complete person. And so actually that's the thing that's stopping him from being complete. That's why he needs to give those away. And it's not that giving away wealth and possessions is an inherently good thing, that poverty is inherently good. It's that actually, for this guy, this is a barrier for him following Jesus. And that's why he's commanded to give that away. So for us today, we may be in a position where we go, actually, I am too attached to some of my possessions. I do need to get rid of them. But that's not necessarily a command that everyone who follows Jesus must get rid of everything they have and sort of live a, you know, a homeless nomadic type existence today. So.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.